Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, Badgers football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal. And it has been a Wednesday, folks. It has been a whirlwind. It started, I think it was not even 8 o'clock this morning, basically, when 8:30, when the Big Ten announced that football was going to be back this fall, ending a six-week, I don't know what the word is anymore, debacle. Ugliness, it just a mess. Let's just leave it there. It was a mess. The Big Ten, you know, with all the reporting, all the rumors, people left and right, citing sources that God knows if they're real or not. But you know what? All that's in the past now. Football is back. That's a good thing. And obviously there's a ton to cover about that. We don't know the schedule yet. We're expecting it to come in the next few days. We're supposed to hear, we as in the media, are supposed to hear from Paul Christ and hopefully some players by the end of the week. So wasn't able to get their reaction to having a season yet this year. But today's episode has Jim Polzin. We're going to talk about the decision to come back, playing 9 games in 9 weeks, which is what they're aiming to do with this schedule, the roles that UW Chancellor Rebecca Blank and UW Athletic Director Barry Alvarez played in Big Ten football coming back, because they were really central figures from the presidential and the return to football side. So Wisconsin really in the middle of all of it, getting football back. And then, of course, anytime we have Jim on, we got to talk some basketball. We talk about his article that was up on Madison.com this week about catching up with Frank Kaminsky. So lots of good stuff there. Jim and I actually recorded via Zoom, staying remote. So the audio quality is probably not as good as it is right now. So you'll probably notice that when that part of the podcast starts. But that's going to start the show, Jim and I talking. And then I'm going to talk about the name, image, and likeness Senate hearing that went on Tuesday. Rebecca Blank, UW Chancellor, was also a big part of that. Just want to give you guys an idea of what this could mean and what both sides want in that argument. But before we get into everything, you're going to hear me and Jim really quickly after this break. All right. Like I mentioned, we're going to have Jim Polzin on here. Jim and I have been, and Todd Molesky, have been all over this stuff all morning here with the Big Ten coming back for football. Jim, first, just kind of what are your thoughts on the Big Ten coming back in general and where we sit right now with the football season?
I'm reluctant to get my hopes up too much, sure, because the last time this happened, 6 days later, you know, everything changed. So I think it's a great starting point. If I could go back and rewrite the way this happened, I wish the Big Ten would have just pressed pause 6 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago, and then, you know, delayed this and not had so much uncertainty and lack of transparency, and you know, just not had a lot of us thinking that spring was going to be the option, and then it turned into, you know, kind of a January thing. And if they just would have just hit the pause button instead of the stop button, I think a lot of this could have changed. And if they would just have been more transparent. I thought today's news conference was great. They had a cross section of decision makers within the conference, right, and each with their own specialty. And I thought they did a really good job of kind of conveying their message and answering the questions that needed to be, you know, asked and answered. So much better showing by the Big Ten. I think they could have saved themselves a lot of heat had they thought this through a little bit better last month.
I agree. And I think that part of it was, you know, they mentioned throughout the press conference today that what they didn't know about myocarditis and some of the other issues was enough to decide to push the season. And I completely understand that. And I think they were right in doing that, because if you got something this serious that you aren't sure about, putting the kids out there was putting them at risk. But as to your point, you could have just said, all right, we're going to try to figure this out and give us a few weeks. Instead, they kind of just blew it up right away. And I think they did a fairly good job today of just acknowledging that too. Like, yeah, maybe we could have done that, but we were trying to be as safe as possible. And we thought,
giving ourselves that much more time to say we're going to play in January or whatever was the best route. Now I think that people are excited to see Big Ten football, but I think there's also going to be a little bit of like apprehension and kind of mistrust in the Big Ten that's been sowed in the last few weeks. It's going to be tough to get over. It's going to take a few years at least for that to kind of wear off, I think.
Yeah, and let's see how this season plays out. Sure. That's going to be a key. If they can get through this and somehow end up on even ground with the rest of the conferences, and, you know, if an Ohio State or somebody else makes the college playoff and you know, the season goes off without a hitch, then I think things look much differently. I guess the question I have, and I'm sure you probably have the same one, is when they released the schedule back in August, there was the way they pumped it up, the way they marketed it was there's all this built-in wiggle room and flexibility. And I thought, wow, you know, really smart to think that way, because who knows what this virus is going to do. And with testing, there are bound to be problems throughout the season. So to have some built-in weeks and flexibility was, I thought, a smart decision. Now this schedule has none of that, right? I mean, it's 8 straight weeks. And so I'm curious to see how it's all going to work out. And we've already seen a little bit with the start of the college football season. There are hiccups, major hiccups.
Yeah, there's a dozen games at this point that have either been pushed back or just straight up canceled. And right. And the idea that the daily testing is kind of I feel like that's what they're clinging on to, is that the daily testing will keep them from having, you know, big enough swash of teams that need to postpone a game. I understand that mentality, but I also wonder, you know, okay, but what if it's 2 quarterbacks? You know, are you going to throw a bunch of freshmen out there? Like, there's the same issues, even though you're going to be testing every day, is if there's a room or a position that gets really affected. Yeah, okay, the rest of the team's out there, but a team's at a massive disadvantage, one versus the other. And then you're trying to do this all in 8 straight weeks, like you mentioned. There's going to be some concerns and some challenges that I think people that are excited today are going to start kind of realizing in the next month or so, as we get ready for this season, that this is not going to be easy by any stretch.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I just, you know, we're still over a month away from this starting. But like I said at the top, this is a good starting point. I'm glad there's hope, at least. I think that was the thing that we really didn't have after August 11th was hope, because there were, even while I agreed with the decision to kind of, you know, stop at the moment, there was no plan for the future after that. It was just kind of we're going to maybe play in the spring. And then that got moved around. And now at least it seems like there's a plan and at least a starting point.
Right. And I wanted to ask you about this, because you've been covering this conference in multiple sports for a long time. Have you ever seen the conference at this level where it's at right now, where, you know, coaches like, let's say, Ryan Day or James Franklin, that have been so vocal, are kind of taking a victory lap, or they're kind of beating their chest saying that they brought football back by challenging the conference, or, you know, some of the other things that have gone on, where there's a lot of, I think, unresolved conflict right now in the conference that needs to be figured out, because I think there are a lot of bruised egos and a lot of people that are all thinking they're pulling for the same thing, where, you know, the best for the student athlete and best for the conference, that had different views. And I think a lot of people, at least publicly, took shots at the Big Ten that right now kind of seem unfair.
Yeah, I mean, I think having a first-year commissioner plays a role in this. Like, I don't know how things would have been different under Jim Delaney, if at all. You know, would this be more of a united front, or would it have been more of a united front under Jim Delaney? My guess is probably, but I don't know that for sure. So I do think the fact that Kevin Warren's a little bit of an unknown has played a role in this. And then really the other thing I thought was a huge mistake was putting him out in front of the camera on August 11th, and only him. And frankly, him looking like he wasn't prepared to answer. He was either unprepared or unwilling to answer the questions that were asked that day.
The obvious ones too, not just any question. Right. It was obvious, like, why are you doing this?
Right. And so,
unknowns.
Right. So that's 101 when you come to problems and how to get out in front of problems. And it's just, you got to have someone that can explain the decision. And so it would have been so much better a month ago to have Warren and, you know, a handful of other people there that could explain what was going on. And I think that's, that really kind of started a little bit of a no confidence around the conference in him. And maybe unfairly so, because my whole point at the time was, yes, he's kind of the face of this conference as the commissioner, but he didn't get a vote that day in terms of stopping the season. There's 14 chancellors right. and presidents, and to not have anybody back him up, and then to have so much just uncertainty, or, you know, they wouldn't say whether there's a vote or not, or some said there was a vote, some said there wasn't. We didn't know who voted which way. It just was, it was chaos. And I just think it could have been avoided. And I think that gave people like Ryan Day, James Franklin, Scott Frost, a chance to voice their opinions without any backlash really within the conference, because there was so much chaos that people were willing to believe and listen to any possible you know, opinion that was out there, especially people who wanted football. And we all want football. We do. But a lot of it's look at it differently than, you know, the people involved that are getting paid and the student athletes, certainly.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I wanted to talk to you about the roles that Rebecca Blank and Barry Alvarez had in this, because I think what this kind of showed was that, you know, we think about Ohio State kind of being the leader of the conference because they're the best on the field. And obviously Gene Smith has been a very prominent athletic director in this conference for a long time, but Wisconsin played a very central role in both football being canceled to start with. I think Wisconsin being on that side flipped some teams that maybe were on the fence. And I think now coming back, the fact that Barry Alvarez was on this return to competition committee and was really at the forefront of, okay, here's what the doctors say we can do. Here's how we can schedule it. Here's how we can work with the TV partners. I think it kind of showed Wisconsin's really central role in the Big Ten as a whole right now.
Yeah, and I do. I think if I thought that for a while, that Wisconsin's, you know, is a name program like Wisconsin, like Penn State or Ohio State or Michigan? No, but it's in that next group, and I think is surrounded by enough teams that have a lot of respect for the institution as a whole. The academic side, the athletic side. And you mentioned Alvarez. I think Alvarez, you know, one of the longest tenured athletic directors, not only in the conference, but in the country. And his voice carries in this conference. So I think it was important to have him on there. I'm glad we've heard from Chancellor Blank in the last couple of days, because I do think, you know, I've heard her speak before, and I think she's a really smart lady. And I think she's, when she talks, she makes sense about a lot of great topics. And that's what was so frustrating like a month ago, was when this decision was made, I just wanted her to get out front and say, why, you know,
yep.
Let all of us know why. That was my biggest thing, is just what were the thoughts behind the decision you made? And then just help us understand, because there's just a lot of people that were confused and didn't understand why the decision was made. So I'm glad they've kind of rallied in that regard. And I think, like you said, they've been those two especially have been very important voices in this process of getting football, you know, at least on paper, back.
Right. And it was funny because Rebecca Blank testified before a Senate committee on Tuesday, talking about name, image, and likeness law. And then anytime you get the Senate committees or any government, I feel like questioning going on, it goes in all different types of directions, topic wise. So she's answering a bunch of questions about COVID-19 response and other things that aren't really pertinent to name, image, and likeness. And then Tim Kaine, a senator from Michigan, right? Yeah. He's asking her all about when the Big Ten's coming back, what the vote is. And it was interesting because she had a very concise, easy answer about why they decided to postpone the season. It's like, I don't think that answer has changed in 5 weeks. Why didn't we hear this, you know, 5 weeks ago? But what can you do? It was just interesting to see how central Wisconsin was to all this. And Jim, you mentioned this before. So now this proposed schedule, we don't know who's going to play when, but we know the dates at least. So the weekend of October 23rd and 24th is going to start the season. It's going to go through the weekend of December 12th. And then the week after that, there's going to be the conference championship game. And then all the teams are going to play in the Big Ten. You know, number two from the East, number two from the West will play each other and so on and so forth. I like the ingenuity in getting a ninth game for teams because I think that's going to be big for a bowl season. I think there's going to be some different rules for the bowls this year that's going to come out eventually. But making sure that you get an extra game to maybe get that sixth win if there's the traditional eligibility standard, or just getting another game for the TV product, because I think that was a big part of it, is getting to a ninth game to satisfy some things there for Fox and ESPN. Because as we know, the budget crisis that Wisconsin's going to be in, any kind of extra TV money is going to help. I just think that this model, as many problems I think they're going to have when you try to get nine games in 9 weeks, I think it does serve some purposes that are good for all the teams in the conference.
And the players, too. That was the other thing. I mean, I think they're trying to make this season as worthwhile for the players. And adding one more game can't hurt in that regard. I think they're trying to prove to players that, hey, this will be a meaningful season. So, you know, come back and play, and you'll get nine games guaranteed, essentially. So I'm interested to see how it works out. You know, what do the crossover games look like during the regular season? How do you balance those so that one team doesn't get, say, Ohio State and Penn State, and another team from the West gets Rutgers and, you know, Maryland or whatever. And then when it comes time for the West to go against the East in those games, how do you avoid matchups that have already happened? You know, going 1-1, 2-2, 3-3 sounds great in theory, but if Michigan and Wisconsin have already played during the regular season, do you want them playing again in a 2-2 game or however it might turn out? That's interesting to me. And again, like, even getting to that point is a long ways away. I think, you know, like you mentioned at the top. So if we get to that point, that's a minor problem. And like I asked Barry today on the Zoom call, another very minor scheduling question, but nobody came out and said Friday nights were a thing, but it appears they very much are going to be a Friday night primetime type deal where they can get games on Friday nights for fans to watch. I think it's a really good idea, and you know, it makes sense that they're doing it. They're trying to get as many eyes, as many nights as possible.
And I think Friday night, especially in this current situation where you don't run into that high school football problem, and that's always going to be a debate as long as the Big Ten keeps playing on Fridays. But in this year in particular, where you don't really have that as widespread, I know only a few pockets in the state are playing right now, I think that works out really well, and especially for the teams, because I think you're going to want to do some different things travel-wise than you're used to, or maybe spread out how you travel, because they keep talking about, you know, the daily testing and continuing to social distance as much as they can, adjusting meetings when they can, especially if they have a positive case on the team. But I still think traveling is a big unknown here. We've already heard some things out of Michigan where when a Michigan team leaves, they might have to quarantine when they get back for a week, or, you know, they might have to do some different things for different schools in these states. But I think traveling is kind of that unknown X factor that these pro teams have figured out because they can have private planes and don't have to really do the average person traveling. But I think some of these college teams are going to have some more troubles that I think I personally think that's where you're going to get the infection potentially, is when they travel to these different campuses or around different people than they're already around right now.
Do you think teams will travel day of if they can? Like, let's say you play a Friday night game or a Saturday night game. Do you avoid, do you travel that day and avoid the hotel stay and minimize contact that way as much as possible? I mean, I know that puts a visiting team at a little bit of a disadvantage because you like to get to your destination 24 hours in advance, have a good night's sleep in the hotel room, and then you're ready. But I just wonder, like, when you said that, I was thinking, is that a possibility, you think? Do you think teams might do that?
I think it is. And I think especially when you look at when you get into the division games, less the crossover because there's a little more distance there. But, you know, when Wisconsin plays Iowa this year, Maybe Minnesota's a smidge too far. I'm not sure, but Purdue, like those games are travelable day of, I think, if you get up early enough or, you know, do something like that. And that does decrease the amount of time you're on other people. And, you know, we say that, as you mentioned, you would like to get a day in or the night in before on the road, you know, stuff like that. But these guys come from high school programs that are traveling distances longer than that all the time. So, I mean, they're somewhat used to it. It's very doable. You just got to make sure that you're there and are able to warm up properly from traveling on the bus or whatnot. But I do think that's possible. And I do think, especially for some of the shorter games, like if, let's say, Indiana and Purdue play this year, that's got to be day of, you know, to me. So I think there's a lot of things that need to be figured out there. But this is going to be a season like no other in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it any better. And I'm fascinated to see how this all works out. Like, you know, selfishly, are we going to be allowed in press boxes? How many of us are going to be allowed in press conferences? How do the post-game interview situations work? You know, are those all Zoom now? It's a lot of questions need to be answered, and further down the line, certainly. I think just getting to this point, the starting point, was important, and we can figure out everything else later.
And I wanted to mention, too, so the Big Ten is covering the expenses for all these tests for all the schools, and that's the right move. My question, too, you know, selfishly, like you mentioned about the media, is I'm imagining if we're going to be coming to the stadium, we've got to be tested in some way, right? Like, they're not going to just let us come in you know, haphazard like that. So I wonder if the school is going to have to cover that, if our paper or the media outlets themselves are going to have to buy their own and stuff like that. I'm just – as much as we finally learned about the play-in and what it's going to look like, I think we're still only like 80% of the way there from an actual kickoff.
Right. I mean, and the other thing is, like, there are other third parties that need to be considered too, officials, you know, how are they tested and when are they tested? You know, we had kind of a month ago when we made a decision that, you know, to stop, and there's a lot of grumbling from fans that, hey, these are young 18 to 22 year old young men who are in good shape. The virus won't affect them. They don't have to worry about it. My counterpoint was always, even if that's true, they're going to be on the field as officials. Some of those guys are in their 60s and 70s and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you do need to take them into consideration. They're going to be around coaches who are, you know, up in age too. So there's a lot of things to consider. And I'm glad we got to this point, but I don't think we're anywhere near the finish line, certainly.
All right. And I think it's going to be interesting. So we're supposed to get Paul Christ sometime in the next couple of days. And I'm going to be interested to see what he said, because I think following Barry Alvarez's lead, you know, he's been very quiet about his personal thoughts about stopping the season and what they've had to do. And now that his team's in a break from team activities because of COVID, what that experience has been like. But a guy that's, you know, kept quiet and now is finally going to be able to play, I wonder just kind of how he feels about finally having some clarity about what's going to happen this season for his team, even though, like we mentioned, we are about 6 weeks away from actually starting.
Yeah, I'm sure he's happy that – obviously he's happy to get going again. I think the frustrating part for him and other coaches were you have so many people asking you questions, parents, players, assistants, and there were no answers. Like, they didn't have answers to give because they weren't getting the answers from the Big Ten and other people. So it was very frustrating, I think, for coaches. And that's probably why some of them spoke out and acted out, because they didn't have great answers to give. And they, you know, you're expected to stand in front of your team and have answers to questions. And when you don't have that, I think it was frustrating. So I think just to get to this point is got to be somewhat of a relief, just to get started again. But the other thing is, like, it's got to be tough to be in Paul Christ's position, because, you know, even like, no matter how you feel about whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing to get started again, you've got a lot of people, players, fans, who are saying we have to do this, right? And how do you then go in front of them and say, it's, you know, this is wrong, we shouldn't be playing, right? And I'm not saying Paul Christ feels that way, but I got to think somewhere there's a coach that thinks this is premature to get going again. And that's a hard sell if you're in front of a team and in charge of a team and trying to convince players who are, you know, gung-ho to get going again. So I don't know, this quarantine has been so long that I just had so many millions of thoughts in my head, and that's one of them that popped up.
No, absolutely. And I think in a similar fashion, the Big Ten is claiming that this vote was unanimous, right? I think that was to avoid.
It's very, very clear that.
In the first line, unanimous vote. Yeah. I don't buy it. I don't think that some of the harder line no's that we've seen, even I know the Northwestern president was on the call today and said, you know, the facts have changed, so my mind changed, which is fair and how you want your leaders to lead. But I don't think this was 14-0, no problem. I think there were some lively debates at this table.
I do too. I think, and that's part of the reason why I think even after the Nebraska chancellor or president kind of spoke out of turn yesterday on the hot mic, saying it happened last night, I don't think it was nailed down until last night. I mean, I think there are some within the conference who are hesitating and, you know, needed to sleep on it, needed more information, needed to be 100% sure before they did it, because it's a huge decision. I mean, no matter how you feel about this, it's a massive decision. And I think they knew they couldn't wait much longer to make it, but I think they wanted to get as much information as humanly possible.
Right. And it's, they talked about it a little bit on the press conference today. The optics of saying, all right, we're going to play football now, as a lot of these campuses, Wisconsin included, are dealing with massive COVID spikes and, you know, dorms being quarantined. And it's funny, I was driving downtown a couple days ago, and a couple of the main buildings, and you, like, if you're on campus, like by Babcock Hall and stuff, Babcock Street, there is like four or five big signs that's like restricted area, like quarantine dorm. And it's just like, I can't imagine being at school right now and having to deal with all this. And the knowledge that this is not a surprise to anyone that's been paying attention. Let's bring in a bunch of people from all different areas and put them in a small space. Like, this was going to happen. And I can't imagine what it's like being on campus full time right now.
Yeah. Very predictable. I mean, like, very predictable that it turned out this way. My wife and I, and we took the kids downtown to State Street like last week. And I was telling her the same thing. I'm like, can you imagine being a college freshman right now? You're excited to go to college. You get there and you are being told you can't do all the things that you're there to do, right? And you have to walk around wearing a mask. And it's just like, man, I'm just so bummed for those people that they have to, that this is how they're going to remember their first year on campus. And let's just hope we get through this and it's not an ongoing thing. But another thing I wonder today, you talk about optics, like if student athletes have rapid testing available to them all the time and you're not doing that for the normal student, man, that's a tough look. I don't know the way to describe it. It's just, I can understand why if you're a normal student, you'd be a little ticked off right now. Mm-hmm. That the athletes are getting favored. Also, and we've talked about this, I think, on the podcast, how do you now explain how student athletes are just the normal students if you're doing this for them, right? In what, playing football again is going to bring a lot of money back that would have been lost. And you're basically, the people that are going out there and getting at risk of being, catching the virus are getting scholarship money and they're not getting anything above that. And it's just, man, it's a hard one to explain if I'm a chancellor or a president right now.
Yeah. And they talked a little bit about this. Yeah. I understand it too. I'm with you. I think they talked a little bit about it during that Senate committee hearing the other day of, you know, that separation between the average student and the student athlete. And it was mostly about, you know, how they can be compensated, how an average student could, you know, make money from a Twitch stream or being a YouTuber or something like that, but a student athlete can't. And then I think it was either Rebecca Blank or the Utah State president kind of came back with, you know, think about everything that a student athlete gets already with mental health services, free food, everything on top of that. So it's kind of that dichotomy between athlete and regular student that the NCAA and all these conferences walk on a really high rope there. And maybe this is one of those tipping points, but it's just kind of crazy to think about.
It does give the athletes more power, I think, which a lot of people have been calling for a long time. So I certainly don't think this hurts.
Yeah, I hear you there. And Jim, anytime we have you on the podcast, we got to talk a little basketball. Make sure you go on Madison.com and read Jim's story on catching up with Frank Kaminsky, the Suns center, talking about a little bit about his time in Madison, but mostly about his future in the NBA and what's happening there. Just what was it like catching up with Frank? I know you talked to him a little bit in the spring when you're doing the tournament relive, but just kind of what was it like catching up with him?
Yeah, it was good. Like I'd been kind of wanting to reach out to him right after the bubble happened, and he took kind of a week to lay low and hadn't seen his family and friends for over, I think, 2 months basically.
Right. So
he kind of wanted to get back to normal in that regard. I had never, you know, as much as I've talked to Frank since he left here, we have never really had the discussion of where you are in the NBA and you know, what happens in the future, where you are going forward. And I thought this was a good year. He's 5 years in now. I thought this was kind of a good time to take stock and say, hey, has it been what you expected? You know, where do you go from here? And he was really good about it. And, you know, I think he's, the gist of the story is when he was a rookie, Marvin Williams was a veteran who played for the Hornets and took him under his wing a little bit. And Frank saw how Marvin interacted with people in the organization, from players to the video people to secretaries. And just Frank really gained a lot of respect for Marvin for how he handled himself and how he worked, you know, how he found a role and kind of worked. And I think Frank kind of sees him at that. You know, Frank didn't come out and say that he knows he's never going to be a star in the NBA, but I kind of gathered that from him that he.
Yeah, I kind of got that from the quotes too. He's like, that's going to be me. I'm going to be a role player the rest of my career here.
And I think he's okay with that. You know, I think he wants to play in the NBA a long time. He knows that 7-footers that can shoot are valuable in some capacity. And so I think he's kind of come to grips with that, and he wants to be a guy that organizations turn to and say, hey, maybe he's not a double digit per game scorer, but he helps us win and he helps people around him. And he's just a good guy to have on the team. So
right.
I think that's Frank's hope. You know, the other thing I thought was really telling was that he said, you know, getting in the NBA is hard, but staying in the NBA is even harder, which I thought was really insightful. Especially because we've seen like his UW teammate, Sam Decker, made it 3 years in the NBA and now he's playing overseas. It's not easy. And Sam was a first round pick and you got to find the right team and the right role within that team to make yourself valuable. And there's a lot of really good basketball players in the US and in the world right now. So knocking down one of those 15 spots on 30-ish teams isn't easy stuff. So I think Frank realizes that, and he's grateful that he's got the opportunity. He's going to kind of keep trying to carve out his own little niche.
Oh, absolutely. Make sure you go on Madison.com and read that story from Jim. And we've been talking all about football. We're supposed to hear something about men's basketball somewhat soon.
Today, Wednesday, is supposed to be kind of somewhat of a decision day on when they're going to start the practice and plans for starting the season. There's all these dates being thrown around. I think a lot of people are kind of shooting for the Thanksgiving time, in part because a lot of schools will have their students off campus by that point.
Yep.
So they're thinking that's the best way of getting started without, you know, having a lot of students around and spreading the virus. There's a lot of talk of bubbles, you know, for non-conference events. You know, the funniest thing that happened this week was the Battle for Atlantis is now going to be played in South Dakota. I don't know if you saw that.
Yep.
Which, and don't get me wrong, like I've been in that building. The Sanford Pentagon is a great facility. I actually
Sioux
Falls, right?
Yeah.
I liked Sioux Falls. It was a great city, but I've been to the Bahamas too. And it's just, there's no comparison.
Especially in November.
Right. So I'm interested. Wisconsin's got a tournament, is scheduled to play in a tournament in Fort Myers. So I'm curious to see if that's going to be on or how they're going to handle the non-conference aspect of the schedule.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jim, thank you so much for joining the podcast. Make sure you're following Jim Polzine, WSJ on Twitter, and all of his work on Madison.com. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Colton.
Big thanks to Jim for coming on the podcast today, breaking all that down with me. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about the name, image, and likeness Senate hearing that happened on Tuesday. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, Rebecca Blank, UW Chancellor, was one of the witnesses that spoke to the Senate committee. And this thing went off the rails pretty quickly. It really was supposed to just be about compensating athletes and name, image, and likeness. Quickly kind of became like a referendum on COVID-19 planning and how they're covering athletes with COVID-19 and teams cutting sports or, you know, cutting coaches' salaries. It went all over the place. Anytime you watch or see a group of senators get together, I mean, feel like things just kind of go haywire because everybody's got their own ideas and their own goals when they get into a meeting. So you can watch the whole thing on Madison.com, and you can also find it on the Senate Help Committee website. So if you want to check it out for yourself, you can go there. But I wanted to touch on some of the biggest things that came out of that meeting and kind of the headlines that you may have missed with the Big Ten football watch that was going on this week. So Rebecca Blank, UW Chancellor, was essentially there reinforcing the NCAA's position that Congress make a law about name, image, and likeness, setting a national standard, and then that law be allowed to be enforced by the NCAA. There is some merit to this idea. I don't think a conference-by-conference approach to name, image, and likeness is going to work because, as we saw, once these bills started popping up in California or Florida, if you've got, let's say, Florida State and Miami can all offer one thing, or, you know, students have opportunities there that they don't have at, you know, at South Carolina or Clemson or something like that. It's just not going to work. You just can't have a patchwork of rules. You can use COVID-19 as a example. You can't operate college sports across this country and across all these states without some uniformity to rules or, you know, plans. So I do think that there needs to be a national standard of how name, image, and likeness is going to work. Try to even out that playing field as much as possible, or as much as possible as it ever is in college sports. But the five key points that Rebecca Blank made was that the NCAA needs Congress to make a rule by July 2021, because that's when some of these state laws start going into effect, and that they need Congress to give the law, the ability to preempt any state law. They need to make it a federal law, a federal issue, as opposed to a state's rights or a state's determination. So they need that. They need an antitrust exemption for the NCAA to enforce the law. They also need this law to include that all name, image, and likeness money comes separate from recruiting. So let's say you can't, as a football program, promise some five-star running back recruit $10,000 from the local car dealership if they sign. Something like that. You can't do that. That's what they want the rule to say. They want the rules or the law to avoid pay-for-play scenarios, kind of like what I just said, or the schools themselves using the players or getting the players' money on their own right as opposed to the players going out and making it themselves or signing their own kind of sponsorship agreements with name, image, and likeness. So the big thing here is that the schools want name, image, and likeness to be completely separate from the school. And then they also want the law to say that student-athletes are not employees of the university. So those are the points they want. And I get some of them. We actually talked about it on a podcast a few months ago with Tom Molesky, if you guys remember. But it was interesting to hear some of the opponents to federal legislation of this law. And one of them being Rand Paul, who's a senator from Kentucky. And I actually, listening to his point and kind of some of the things he was saying, I agree with him. You know, his big point was that the NCAA already has the tools to make such a rule or to make such a nationwide standard of how name, image, and likeness can work. And their big bargaining chip that they can say to teams that don't want to follow it or states that want to enact different rules is that, okay, if you go ahead and do something different, well, you're just not in the NCAA anymore. And obviously when you're talking about pretty much every school or every program but football, the NCAA helps that and runs the championships and all that type of stuff. Here's the problem, though. Football at the Power Five schools, as we talked about on this podcast, already wants to be out of the NCAA. They're already seeing all the problems that the NCAA has caused them and the lack of leadership that it got throughout this COVID situation. So this, the sport of football, where you're going to see the majority of your name, image, and likeness deals, they already want to leave. So the NCAA is saying, all right, well, if you don't listen to us, you're out. This could just be an out for these universities. And then the other point of this is that I think it's pretty clear that the NCAA is trying to use Congress to do its bidding and then allow it to become some type of law enforcement officer. When we have this, you know, 70-year track record of the NCAA being really bad at enforcing its own rules or investigating its own rule violations. So how do you expect Congress to give you some type of authority when the authority that you're already supposed to have gets, you know, tossed away left and right whenever something bad happens or whenever something that you deem bad happens? So the big thing, or I should keep saying that, but name, image, and likeness legislation or rulings are coming. Rand Paul was really one of the only people on this committee that was pretty staunchly opposed to Congress making such a law about name, image, and likeness. So it's coming. So there's going to be some type of national standard, I think. Whether Congress writes it or not, we'll see. But there's going to be a national standard. But the model really needs to be figured out because there was some thought to you set a cap on how much you can make name, image, and likeness-wise, or that name, image, and likeness money has to get pooled together and then distributed to all athletes, which would be kind of crazy to me. But the Senate hearing didn't really seem to advance any one particular idea over another. You know, who would have thought ineffective or, you know, inefficient government? Us? No way. But this is definitely something we got to keep our eye on over the next 9-8 months here, because whatever gets decided or however name, image, and likeness ends up being governed, I guess is the word, is really going to affect the future of college football. Because think about this right now. Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence are probably the two most recognizable faces of college football. Obviously, yes, their voices in the social justice movements and the fight to get Big Ten football back elevated some of that. But because of their position playing quarterback, because of their schools, Clemson and Ohio State, these are two of the marquee guys in college football. If they were allowed to make money, I saw a graphic of it not too long ago. You know, a typical, let's say, sponsored Instagram post of one of those guys could net them almost $100,000. So we're talking about potentially millions of dollars for these kids. Now, that, those are extreme examples. They're the top of the top. But, I mean, we're talking about a lot of money that's going to be out there potentially being able to be made by college football players. And the way that programs either invest themselves into creating partnerships or creating deals where it opens doors for players for name, image, and likeness partnerships or sponsorships, how the programs kind of play this could affect recruiting. You could see – I really think you could see some type of smaller school that happens to have, you know, a big alumni base or happens to be in an interesting spot. Like, let's say some school in San Francisco or a school in Dallas, SMU. They've already kind of done this. Getting businesses together and really kind of reshaping college recruiting because of all the money that a player could make. You know, you think about SMU back in the 80s. They made that 30 for 30 about it. I think that situation could happen again, but it'd be above board. So we could see a shift in the college football landscape depending on how some of these schools and some of their boosters play this. So this is definitely something we got to keep our eye on until next summer when some of these rules start getting into effect. All right, guys, as we wrap up the show here, just make sure you're on Madison.com checking out a ton of great stuff over the last few days. Got a story about football coming back and how it came back, why other fall sports probably won't be coming back, Kevin Warren and the criticism that the Big Ten took over the last few weeks. Tom Oates wrote a column about football coming back, the politics of all of this. When the schedule comes out, we'll have a big coverage of that as well. The implications of how the schedule is going to look, all kinds of stuff on Madison.com. So jump on there and make sure you're reading up on all the stuff that we've been doing the last few weeks here. Big thanks to Jim Polzin for jumping on the podcast today and for Todd Molesky helping out covering everything Wednesday with all the craziness. I felt bad. I kept texting him, asking him a bunch of questions as he's trying to write. So appreciate him tag teaming and all that stuff with me. And then on Madison.com, make sure you catch up on my series of recruiting stories. I got one on Deacon Hill up there, Antoine Roberts. They're up right now. Al Ashford III, the surprise cornerback recruit that committed last week. He's going to be the subject of this week's story. And then next week is TJ Bowlers, hoping to get down to Iowa and watch his game on Friday, actually. So hopefully that works out. Hopefully next week we're actually talking about real games and a schedule. I know I keep saying that, but it's kind of wild to think about from where we were a few weeks ago. So for this episode, my name is Colton Bartholomew. Thank you very much for listening.